The most predominant feature I see with inattentive ADHD is difficulty with task initiation, motivation, doing things that are interesting or on fire. Not having a lot of dopamine is not a character flaw. Chronic sleep deprivation or sleep disruption. People who experience that will test as if they have ADHD. Brain is like more focused on the infant's needs. Remembering that estrogen is this like massive player with dopamine, that crash can be huge. When dopamine's lower or inhibited, ADHD is worse. That's just the take home.
Are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons-only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today I have on a guest named Dr. Carrie McMillan to talk all about ADHD and motherhood. She is an integrative ADHD specialist as a naturopathic medical doctor. She is an integrative ADHD practitioner, naturopathic doctor, and she is going to walk us through today all about how hormones interplay with ADHD. So we talk about a normal cycling woman in the menstrual cycle, the ups and downs of estrogen and progesterone. We talk about ADHD in pregnancy, ADHD in breastfeeding, and just in postpartum in general, and all of these different nuances of the way that the certain factors of physiology are sort of up against us, or maybe when they do help us and they play with us so that we can not shame ourselves. We can have the validation that our symptoms are worse in certain times. And then we also do talk about some solutions and the way that that looks with or without medication. So if this is you, I think you're going to learn a lot and also just in general feel walk away feeling validated that, yeah, this happens. It is harder for you as it is for me too, as a woman with ADHD who's now about to have their fifth kid. So thank you guys for being here and I hope you learn a lot. Okay, welcome back to the podcast. And today we have on a special guest, Dr. Carrie McMillan, an integrative ADHD specialist, naturopathic physician, naturopathic doctor like me, who is dedicated to this work, helping people with ADHD and other integrative mental health issues, sleep, different things like that. So I know you don't only see ADHD, but a lot of your patients do have it. And I was so excited to find you because I really wanted to interview somebody who is a mom also. And I know you, so we've spoke about this before we recorded. You actually don't have ADHD, but you still have three kids and you work with people in this population. So I feel like you're very equipped to answer these questions because it's a specific kind of thing, I think. And for those of us who do have it, it's like a special circumstance with having a lot of little kids and feeling pulled in a million directions. So I have my own questions I'd love to ask you. I also polled our Instagram community for questions, and there's a lot of overlap in some of these like similar concepts that people are really wanting clarity on. So I'm ex so excited to talk to you today. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here. Really excited. It's my favorite topic to talk about.
Okay, great, because I'm going to ask you a million different things about it. But first, I do want to read your bio so people have a little bit more familiarity with you. So Dr. Carrie McMillan began her medical training at a traditional medical school in Detroit, Michigan, but soon found that naturopathic medicine was more in line with her approach to helping patients. So she and her family moved to Seattle, where she completed her medical training at Bassier University. Today, she's a licensed naturopathic physician in Washington State with her husband, three children, and far too many animals to list. Ooh, I kind of actually want to hear it because I have a lot of animals too. So we'll get there. Dr. McMillan has an extensive medical background and aside from her current medical practice, has worked in clinical research, pharmaceutical writing, laboratory medicine, and physical education. This diverse training gives her a truly integrative and holistic medical approach, pulling the best practices from both allopathic and naturopathic medicine. Love that. A combination of a fascination with neuroscience, along with navigating a world of ADHD and neurodivergence in her own family, led Dr. Carey to create a practice specializing in working with people with ADHD. She's passionate about helping children and adults gain control over their lives through accurate diagnosis and better understanding of how their awesome brains work. Oh, I love that you call it awesome. I mean, there is gifts in having ADHD. It's not all bad.
Yeah, definitely. And I always say that. And there's a big movement to kind of like highlight this as a superpower, which I think is awesome and great. And I absolutely like it is absolutely true that ADHD brains are my favorite brains. And luckily, because I'm surrounded by them. And at work. I think sometimes where I don't lean into that too much of it being a superpower because I think that invalidates the struggle that's also there, just because our society and our world is not really made for ADHD brains and there are real struggles there. So,
Yeah, no, exactly. It's sort of like we need to say, hey, there can be some benefits here, but also if you're having a really hard time living in modern world and as a mom with this, that's totally expected and okay given the way that your unique mind thinks about different things. I actually was just only recently diagnosed with ADHD in the last couple of years, and I'm 36. But it does make so much sense. I think I'm very high functioning. I figured out different ways to cope. I know the way that my brain needs to be stimulated in order to learn. That was kind of, I did have a, when I was in school, a best year also, but I was in the best year of San Diego. It's sort of when I was like, I started to have the first sneaking suspicions of it because I would have, I'm whatever brand of ADHD, and we'll talk about the types too, is the type where I have to ha maintain a certain level of mental stimulation, otherwise I'm bored. And then I don't pay attention to anything. So I would have my notes. I'd be sitting in class in the front row, because if I didn't sit in the front row, I mean, goodbye. So I sat in the front row and I had my notes up. And then I would have half my screen also like my iMessenger, chatting with my friends. And I'd swipe over and have another screen of like online shopping or looking at something or reading a blog or researching. And I would be simultaneously doing all three of these tasks. And if I didn't, I could not pay attention to the lecture. And I'm raising my hand, I'm engaged, I'm like taking notes, I'm learning, but I needed there to be this multitasking, which I'm sure is pathological and probably burned me out in a way that wasn't necessary, but that is just what I learned and adapted to do because if I just sat there, my brain would trail off. I would get so bored. They're talking too slowly. Like, oh my gosh, like I know I speak very quickly. It's one of the most common feedback that we get on the podcast is like, Morgan needs to slow down. And I'm just like, you guys, I'm so sorry. I cannot. Honestly, if I could speak faster, I would, because my brain is not going even the speed of my mouth. It's going a lot faster. So anyway, it's just been an interesting thing to see, like, oh, how was I as a little girl probably coping and adapting with this too? And throughout my whole life, but again, it hasn't been something that has caused me problems until I've had multiple kids. So I have four and I'm pregnant with my fifth. And it's moments where everyone's talking. I am in the middle of trying to get a task done. I cannot complete a single thought at this at once, and I'm forgetting immediately what it was that I was doing or saying or thinking about, that those are the moments where I feel like I want to explode. And I think that there is a certain level where anyone feels frustrated in that moment. It's actually one of our common questions that was submitted through Instagram is like, how do I know if I have this versus just feeling overstimulated? So I'd love to chat about that with you, but I just think it's really beautiful that you've dedicated your life and that you love the ADHD brain because it is unique, and it's like, wow, the squirrel that, distraction or hyperfocus or lack of focus or whatever. So, yeah, can you give us a little bit of an overview? What is ADHD in general? And then what are the general subtypes without going into like, I'm sure we could have an entire conversation just about that, but just so because I think some people don't know that there is different subtypes.
Yeah, definitely. So, and common thing I will hear people say when they talk to me, they'll say like, "Oh, I don't have ADHD, I have ADD." I'm like, "Oh, well, to start with, it's all ADHD now, and I just speak that way because that's how the diagnosis coding is in medicine at this point." So, but there are subtypes. And so when people used to say ADD, they meant ADHD inattentive subtype, and that means that they didn't have this like The hyperactivity piece, they aren't necessarily jumping all over the place, but they have trouble with focus. Maybe they're more distracted by their own thoughts than anything. So yes, there are three subtypes. So that first one, ADHD, predominantly inattentive subtype, is pretty common. Also, a little more common in women, a lot more common to get to be undiagnosed until later in life because they're not disruptive, not causing like big issues often. And those are the kids that are going to be diagnosed early, the ones that are causing big disruptions. So, like we don't always see the internal struggle. So the second type is ADHD, predominantly hyperactive, impulsive. And honestly, this is actually like pretty rare as far as, and I don't know if it's rare in its presentation or just rare to seek medical support. I have, I think, three patients out of hundreds who are hyperactive impulsive subtype. So that is, and actually, that's a lot more of, I'm going to be a little bit anecdotal here, but these are the people who they're sort of like you talked about, like they are just doing a million things at once, always very high functioning. They are often in, fields that are really high demand. Like you have everything's on fire always, and they perform great in those situations. But they're miserable if it's not like that, and they can get nothing done. But the problem that I will see is I'll usually tell people like, "Oh, I'll see you in your 40s when you're in burnout because this is not sustainable." We may be functioning well, but it does take a toll. And so, ideally identifying that earlier can help prevent it.
Shoot. Is that what you think I am? Is that what you're trying to say, Dr. Carey?
I don't know, but I mean.
But I don't have a hard time not getting things done and when things aren't on fire. I don't identify with that.
Good. That's awesome.
So, I mean, maybe there's that. I don't know. I kind of feel like I always am just. I do have a hard time relaxing. I have a hard time just like sitting down and chilling out.
Yeah, for sure. It's like it's one of the diagnostic criteria. It's like, do you feel like you're always on the go, driven by a motor, or do you feel kind of restless, like I'm bored, let's do something, like I've got to do a thing, otherwise I'm not happy.
Yeah, there's just so much to do. I can't objectively look around and be like, everything is done. I can just sit. But I do, if I go on vacation and I don't have to like, it's not my kitchen, it's not my stuff. I mean, I'll chill on the beach. I'll read a book for 9 hours at a time, whatever. But if I'm in my house, there's constantly something to do. So I don't know how to differentiate that. But you don't have to diagnose me. I just was kind of like beeping in to be funny about that middle one. But so what's the third type then?
Really just combined type. So it means that you've met the criteria for both of the other two subtypes. So,
Okay.
and it's not like the criteria are, like you could be inattentive subtype and be a fidgeter. Like you're constantly fidgeting, but that might be the only place where we really see it. And so even though that's a hyperactive impulsive symptom, if you only have just like one or two of those, you might get an inattentive diagnosis. So it's really
And
like
inattentive, like, is are we saying like they're the kind of people that can't focus, like they cannot pay attention? Is that what that means?
inattentive ADHD is really just that's it's not a great title for it. Because the most predominant feature I see with inattentive ADHD is difficulty with task initiation, motivation, doing things that are interesting or on fire. It's just that, that executive function piece, but also being able to stay focused in the moment when it's boring. And it might not be distractions externally, although it could be. It could also be like, oh, I was started thinking about something different. What was I doing in this moment? Now I'm like off thinking about something entirely different. So it's hard to like stay focused. That's the inattentiveness piece. But there's this other piece that's the motivation, organization. Like, can I break down a project? Can I like estimate time well? Those are all in the inattentive category. Even not a great,
Okay.
but yeah.
That, yeah, like walk into a room, not know what you're doing,
Yes.
kind of
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah. The,
Okay,
yeah.
what about then, you hear about this like where people can't break focus. They get so focused that they can't stop. Where does that land?
It's actually not considered like one of the criteria within one of the two categories, though it's absolutely something we see. And that speaks more to the piece of you're in something, you are getting dopamine from it in the moment. And the fact that, dopamine, and we haven't really gone into neurotransmitters too much yet, but Dopamine's like, the reward. We hear talk about it a lot with ADHD, reward, motivation, focus. And the thing with ADHD is you're either not getting enough dopamine or your receptors are kind of dulled to it. So it just doesn't have the same impact. So when you do get something that gives you dopamine, it's really hard to break from it. Yeah, it's more about being able to, like control your focus that's difficult.
Okay.
Yes.
So no matter how it's going, whether or not you can't stay focused or you can't break yourself from it, it's still the root cause is you should have more control over it in
Being
general.
able to control that, right?
Okay, yeah. And so what exactly is happening with dopamine? Because I think some people are like, I don't have any dopamine. It's like, well, you do, but let's go to that a little bit.
I mean, this is always the caveat of we don't fully know exactly, right, what's happening in ADHD. We know a couple trends. We know that meds that affect dopamine and norepinephrine will impact ADHD. We know some things. But essentially, thinking to really simplify, dopamine being the that's what sort of gives us a sense of we're going to get a reward from this, so we're going to do it. Like it motivates us that the reward is coming, and we get that like good feeling afterwards. It's sort of like and so with ADHD, it is either that dopamine, like our brains don't your brain doesn't release it as much when you do something. Or that the receptors that pick it up are a little dulled or less sensitive. Or, with neurotransmitters, we talk about like something is without going into it too much, something's released, but sometimes it just doesn't stay in the area long enough. Dopamine just like it's there, but for a moment and it's pulled back too quickly. That might be the problem too. So it could be any of those, but the end effect is your body isn't that your brain is not getting this dopamine signal for long enough, strong enough, for certain things.
And then, so that creates like seeking behaviors in people, also alongside, yeah, this like inability to just like, okay, so I'm just trying to relate what's happening if somebody's trying to do the dishes and then they like do that thing where they look and then the trash can's full. And so then they start taking out the trash and then they halfway leave that and then they start doing this and they start doing that and da da da. It's like they're getting a little bit of. Like a normal brain would be able to stay on task and say, oh, I'll do that in a moment because they're getting enough dopamine from whatever it is that they're doing. Whereas maybe like my brain would look at that and go, the potential of the reward I'm going to get if I take out the trash is driving my behavior to just go do that instead and break my focus from my other task.
Yeah, well, dopamine is part of that. But then the other aspect is, it's not as simple as just the chemicals. It's also the areas of the brain. So your prefrontal cortex, like the planning one, right? The part that is more like, I'm not going to eat all my food today because I won't be able to get food tomorrow. So I have to like plan that out and think about that. That's that type of planning and organization and breaking things down and staying focused. That's in the prefrontal cortex. And that is not as either strong as far as its control over your actions in ADHD or not as well developed often. So this, like in the, I'm getting sidetracked, I think is probably more about, your brain's ability to say like, okay, wait, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to hold the nut. There's also a piece of like, can I hold that in my mind that I need to do this next while I finish this task, which is another aspect, like working memory. A lot of people with ADHD will say like, oh, I interrupt people because I'm afraid I'll forget what I'm going to say, or I'm going to go do the other thing because I might forget to do it otherwise. And that's just a coping mechanism for knowing like, you probably often do forget that because like your brain, your working memory, your brain's ability to hold like, oh, I need to do that next is not super strong. So
And is that because of dopamine that it's not su you can't hold that memory, or what is
it's
that?
actually honestly that piece I don't know even if we fully understand it well enough because neurotransmitters are also about like, oh, it's the dopamine, it's in the prefrontal cortex versus dopamine, like in a different area of the brain, they're going to have different actions. So I don't know that we can fully say, like, this is just dopamine versus this is just like a prefrontal cortex executive function that is going to be weaker in ADHD. So.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that is my most infuriating symptom, that exact thing. If I don't write everything down,
Oh, yeah.
which again it is like interesting because I've just figured that out my whole life. I've been a list maker like as a little girl. I think there's a part of me maybe that liked to check it off or whatever, but now I'm just like, no, it's imperative to my getting anything done. Otherwise, I never would. I just, it would be gone. And it's frustrating. Like, I'll just be in the shower thinking to myself, oh, okay. Like repeating constantly on a loop two or three different like tasks that I want to do when I get out. Because if I don't, it's just, it's crazy how gone it can be. And I know that that is, I'm also pregnant right now, and so it's worse, and then it'll be worse postpartum and blah, blah, blah. But wow, what a weird thing to know that about your brain. But then I can remember details of, everything to do with pregnancy and birth and lactation. It's just like,
Yeah, it's a
call Amy,
totally.
call Amy, call Amy, call Amy. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing. It's exactly what you're talking about is working memory. And there are some people with, like, it's common to have working memory deficiencies with ADHD, but there are some people that, like, I have excellent working memory and I still have ADHD. Like, they're not,
Okay.
like, the executive functions that are, different in each person. You can take a, I usually give my patients like an executive skills questionnaire. There's actually one in, if you're familiar with the book Smart But Scattered, they have Smart But Scattered Guide to Success is the one's kind of for adults. And they go into all these executive functions and they do a little test on those. You can kind of see like which executive functions are strongest for me and which ones are weakest. Working memory is one of those. And the true test for working memory is I would be like, oh, I'm going to read off 10 random numbers and I want you to tell them back to me in reverse order without writing them down. Right. So people,
Nope.
absolutely not. That's the working memory test, right? And so, do we usually have to do that in our lives? No, but the way that presents is it has nothing to do with I remember what happened a year ago or I remember this thing I read. It has to do with I have to hold something in my mind while I'm doing something else or manipulating the information and then repeat it back. And that's a di like it's a different type of memory, and that is often pretty weak in ADHD. Yeah.
Yeah, and then when you add kids into this is when moms, I think, can get really irritated really fast, 'cause it's like, how am I supposed to live my life when I'm being interrupted all the time and being asked questions or told information? My favorite thing now, what's happening, 'cause I have a 10, 7, 5, and 2-year-old, is my 10-year-old is telling me something like, there's a birthday party next week and here it is, all the details, blah, 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 blah. And then my 7-year-old's like, not like, she missed one word of what he was saying. So then she's interrupting him to like get clarity, because she's like, wait, what'd you say? What are you talking about? Whose birthday party? Who, blah, blah. And then my 2-year-old is like drawing on the wall or something, or like crying in the corner. And it's all like different stuff, but I'm trying to at simultaneously take in, these details that I don't want to forget of whatever it is that he's saying, and clarify the question and like save my cabinets from the marker. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I mean, I guess, yeah, like anyone would find that in that moment to be overstimulating. But so, okay, let's just go into that then. So how does one get diagnosed with ADHD? If you're trying to figure out like, are my responses, is my experience of this motherhood gig normal? Or is there maybe something where I'm having a bit more of a struggle because of the way my brain is getting like distracted or has a hard time focusing, et cetera? So what's the best diagnosis method, I guess, for ADHD?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if I could say best because it's so different. I mean, there are some primary care doctors that know enough about it that are pretty good at being like, yeah, that sounds like ADHD. Usually the process is, especially as adults, it's a lot simpler, honestly, most of the time, where you do like a few questionnaires. So we have some type of something to score as well as take a history. Kind of a big part of ADHD too is when did your symptoms start? Was there any indication of it? You can, and yeah, there's a lot of nuance to that. That's why it's important to find someone who's like, I understand ADHD well enough. I can like guide you through this. So, it really depends on the provider who gives the diagnosis, but the most appropriate way to give the diagnosis is someone who's pretty knowledgeable about it does like a pretty in-depth, visit, a long intake. Like my minimum one is about an hour and a half to start with. And then they get questionnaire surveys to take home and one observer survey. So someone who kind of knows you who can say like, oh, I also see this. And I can say, like, speak to, like, whether this is a struggle or not. You also have to be taken with it yourself a little bit sometimes, but it's an important part of the diagnosis. You can get something called a neuropsychological evaluation. I love those for kids in particular, because they're still learning, and that gives us a lot more nuance. Like a neuropsych eval, you would go to a neuropsychologist. And it's a couple hours of testing. They do an IQ test too, and they kind of look at different things. And I like those because in kids, because you can also say, like, oh, your auditory processing is actually you struggle more with that. And so, like, we would want to incorporate that to, like, your school plan or know these things. It's also kind of cool to know if you can do that as an adult. The drawback is they're usually not covered by insurance. The older you are, the longer the testing takes. So they're just more in depth for an adult versus for a child. But they do, and it depends on the neuropsychologist, but they'll even do certain things. Like one of the classic tests will be, it's a little more objective, but there'll be letters and numbers coming on a screen, and you hit like the space bar every time one comes, unless it's like an X, and then you don't hit the space bar or vice versa. And they do it for like 10 minutes, and the goal is for you to be bored. And so they want to see if your reaction time is changing, because that's sort of an objective measure of like you're getting distracted, right? But again, there's a lot of nuance to that in context, and some people can do great because they're like, I'm going to really focus on this test, even though this is going to wipe me out for the rest of the day and it's not sustainable. Right.
Yeah, it depends on your grit, like your mental grit to some extent to overcome some of that stuff, I bet.
Right. So, but I, if somebody's like, hey, I want to talk, I think always start with your primary care doctor first and see. They should have referrals. If not, if they don't do it, and then often like a therapist may also do it. It doesn't have to be a neuropsychologist, but they could do it too.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for that. Okay, so I want to go into now, like specifically, my goal for this episode is to talk about the changes that we go through as women with hormonal changes and how hormones interplay with ADHD. So, like, menstrual, however you want to go for it, go for it. I want to hear about like menstrual cycle just changes, luteal phase struggles, I'm sure. Estrogen to me seems like it quells my ADHD symptoms, but maybe that's not true for everybody. I don't know. Maybe I just feel, or maybe it's progesterone. Maybe because when I'm pregnant, I feel so much calmer and like my memory is off because I'm kind of like, I don't know. But I also just don't care. I'm kind of like just in a different state of, oh, whatever, where I'm not so neurotic about it. But yeah, so like menstrual, so for like a regular cycling woman, and then the states of pregnancy and postpartum, and then is there a nuance there between like if you're postpartum and you're breastfeeding, or if you're postpartum and you're not breastfeeding too? Because like, how does maybe prolactin doesn't have that big of a difference on her. Maybe it does. So those are the things I would like to go into next, and like what you see, what's the physiology there, what can be expected. I think it'll be validating for women to hear because, they have their own experiences of it being like some of those states are just hard in general. Like maybe people have PMDD with their cycles, or they have terrible pregnancies because there's something else going on too, like hyperemesis gravidarum, like they're puking all the time. But it's like, well, yeah, and maybe it's also exacerbated in this way with your brain or with postpartum. To me, like personally, postpartum is always where I struggle the most. There's lots of reasons for that. My babies are all tongue and lip tied, so like I'm in pain and I get mastitis and we have to do the whole tie release thing, and it's a lot of stress and it's just not easeful. But I also, there's a whole layer on that. Even if I had a totally normal baby, I know my brain is like not handling the hormone changes properly. But whereas when I get my period, it's fine. So I don't know. Anyway, let's just go ahead and dive in.
It's funny because what you described in your symptoms, I'm like, oh yeah, that aligns perfectly with the neurochemistry of what's happening. And
Okay, good. Well, that's validating.
not everyone does, because there's always nuances. Like some women are really sensitive to progesterone changes. Some women have progesterone gives them, like, often progesterone has a calming effect to some degree. I'll talk about that a little more, but some women have like a paradoxical, it causes anxiety. And so that's going to affect things. So they're all those nuances too. But yeah, the way you described it is like, oh yeah, no, that's pretty textbook. And I
Okay,
can
that's
tell
good.
you. And I like this because that, and so when I started working with women with ADHD and more, and I started actually doing like these classes where I would do, we're going to understand ADHD, in this, and then we're going to talk about like some techniques to try. And I realized that the understanding piece was sometimes the most therapeutic because there is this frustration in like, why am I broken like this? Like, why can't I do this? I should be able to do this. And if you fully like start to understand, you can just be smarter about where you're spending your energy too and be like, oh yeah, of course I'm irritable because my bandwidth for emotional regulation is gone because I spent it all on working memory like during the 20-minute conversation with my three kids today. So, like you can start to understand and see that these are things you can do, but they're going to take a lot more energy and take a lot more out of you, depending. So, but yeah, so let's kind of start with the baseline of to, like I said, there's always differences in people's reactions, but in general, estrogen is going to support dopamine. And it does it through a lot of different ways. Like it has to do, like it changes like receptor sensitivity to dopamine. It kind of keeps dopamine around a little bit longer. But for all intents and purposes, like more like higher estrogen in general is going to be more like functional dopamine levels. Progesterone actually can kind of have an opposite effect. It sort of counteracts estrogen, and a lot is about this ratio too. But progesterone can be, more calming in a way, but also can bring like a brain fog with it a little bit, like cognitive struggles. So in the first part of your if you're cycling in the first part of your menstrual cycle in the follicular phase, higher estrogen, lower progesterone. And a lot of women will talk about how they're like, oh, I'm super on it. I'm super productive for that first part. Like, feel great, get all kinds of things done. And that makes sense as far as estrogen being a little bit higher. And then in the second half of their cycle in that luteal phase, progesterone, right, becomes more dominant. And then they'll start to struggle a little bit more, be a little more fatigued, especially right before their period, where there's maybe even a sharper drop. And so that's where you kind of see like the emotional regulation struggles and those types of things happen. But, thinking estrogen, more dopamine, progesterone, kind of dampening this dopamine effect, the calming effects can be beneficial, but it can worsen ADHD symptoms, really, is what it comes down to. So, and especially if you notice that cognitive blunting type of thing, like I just, the brain fog, like, isn't, yeah, I'm not as sharp, right? So, and like I said, I'm speaking dopamine. Let's use that as the mate. There are other hormones, neurochemistry, like at play here, like serotonin, et cetera. But for all intents and purposes, we'll stick with dopamine because I feel like that's the biggest player in ADHD. So those are really common. I've had a lot of women too say like just knowing that and kind of knowing like, okay, I'm gonna get less done in my luteal phase. It's just like all there is to it, and like I'm more okay with that. Can ease that anxiety a lot and that frustration a bit more, and you give yourself a little more grace in that time because neurochemically you need to, right?
Yeah, there's this is Dr. Leah, my co-host, talks about this a lot in, scheduling. If you can, if you have the luxury to do this, trying to kind of place activities in your life and goals and deadlines and things around your cycle. There's a good book called Do Less, that I'll link in the show notes, that discusses this too about, yeah, we are not the same person all the time. Men wake up on a 24-hour cycle. They're the same every day. Same in the morning. Well, their morning is the same every morning, and then their evenings is the same because of their hormonal cycles on a 24-hour rhythm, and we're on a 28-day rhythm-ish generally. And so it's like to ignore that and act like it's not happening doesn't serve anybody. Although our modern society wants to think that we're robots, we're not. And it's really, I mean, I don't know if it's just because I'm more sensitive or more aware, but I feel like as I've had more kids too, and as I'm getting into my later 30s, I really notice that. Like, man, my luteal phase, I'm just like, wow, I don't know if I just didn't noticed this before or what's going on, but it is very different feeling to me now. And ovulation is the best party day ever. It's like you can't deny it. It feels so good. It's like I wish I was just ovulating all day, every day. And I think I tend to personally run a little bit low on all hormones, kind of just a low everything. I'm like hypotensive, hypo blood sugar, glycemic, hypo everything. And so then to get that little bump feels really good. And then I think that's also why I love being pregnant. But like you were saying, the progesterone brain fog, that's probably what I was referring to, where I'm like, I just don't care. I don't remember and I don't care because I can't. It's literally like a mist up there, but it feels kind of good in comparison to my normal, where I'm like, da, 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 like trying, like neurotically trying to figure out all these different things. But so, yeah, I totally agree with you. This validation of understanding ourselves that you're not crazy, you're not psycho, you're not just like maladapted, you're not just not dealing with it and everybody else is. It's like, no, we're all experiencing this to some level. And you just may not be aware of it, but giving it a little bit more reverence and recognition is okay. And yeah, it breeds just more grace and compassion for yourself that you're like, I am so feeling uncreative. Like, I just cannot think of a new idea for this thing. Like, what is going on? And it's like, yeah, well, you might have to wait a couple weeks for that to come back.
Right. 100%. Yeah. And it's much different when you can kind of name it and understand the neurochemistry behind it a little bit, because, even something like, oh, I don't have a lot of dopamine right now is different than I'm lazy is why I'm not doing this, right? Like, not having a lot of
Yes.
dopamine is not a character flaw. Even like struggling with task initiation, which is just such a big thing. So people be like, yeah, I just am so lazy. And I'll catch my patients. I'm like, oh, I don't want you to say it's not that you're lazy, you're just struggling with task initiation right now. And that's what it is. And it feels different when you can make that shift in your like how you view your own struggles too, for sure. For sure.
Okay, so then what happens then when we become pregnant
Yeah.
for this
So
whole scenario?
sometimes, and there's a lot, so there are so many factors going on. As you mentioned, like there could be other health issues and struggles going on. One of the big impacts, though, I find, so you might think first, like, okay, estrogen goes up, right? Progesterone also kind of goes up. The thing is, first trimester, progesterone, you're actually progesterone dominant. So even though estrogen is going up, progesterone is like such a big player here. So it depends on how someone responds to that. It also is going to depend on, like HCG, this other hormone, which is not necessarily directly affecting dopamine, but is affecting like, how you like your fatigue level, and that's going to impact your ability to do executive functions. So some of these things that start to impact you are just like, okay, when you have ADHD and it's already difficult to do a lot of these executive functions, we could put anything on top of there. But if it's like fatigue, poor sleep, these things, you take someone who's already like working pretty hard to get at this level, and now it's like that much harder. So sometimes it's just like, tips the scales a little bit. So first trimester, though, often is pretty difficult. Just if we think of that too as like a progesterone heavy state, that like pregnancy brain, is that cognitive difficulty there, the fatigue, the sleep disruptions, which definitely can start then for sure. Sleep is a huge player with ADHD. That's an entirely like a massive topic, but I will say this. So consider that they've done some studies where chronic sleep deprivation or sleep disruptions, right? Like periodic sleep disruptions, people who experience that will test as if they have ADHD. They will look identical.
Oh.
So it's that big of an issue. So does that mean that, oh, it's not ADHD, it's just sleep issues? No, well, in some cases it could be, but like I would never give that diagnosis to someone who's just sleeping 4 hours in a night. But it also means that if we put sleep issues as a layer on top of your struggles, it's just exponentially worse. So that's a big
Well, and yeah, I just want to pop in and say that this is where this always surprises parents, but I mean, I'm going to say it. I know we're talking about women here and not kids, but if your kid is having disrupted sleep from like some sort of an oral posturing thing, a dysfunctional, mouth breathing, snoring, grinding, whatever, they're having a sleep disordered breathing presentation, they may be having ADHD symptoms, although they do not actually have ADHD. So I'm glad that you said that because at first I was like surprised to hear that. And then I was like, wait a minute, no, this makes total sense. That is one of the things with kids
Yeah.
is trying to distinguish and figure out, okay, is their brain actually able to rest and recover and get into a good deep sleep state? Or are they always in this like kind of, constantly trying to get air so they're in a survival mode, this sympathetic nervous system loop all night long, and they're not able to have this. So then they wake up, and then, yeah, their brains are not going to function completely properly, and they may have these symptoms that arise. But same things, even just with women. So then that, I mean, that even just in and of itself, looking forward into the future of this conversation, is going to play a huge role with postpartum, obviously, because you're
Exactly.
not
It
sleeping.
does. It does. And the thing is too, with sleep apnea, and it should be, honestly, it should be a rule out. Like you should, in an ideal world, you should always have a sleep study before you give a diagnosis of ADHD, just to see. And sleep apnea is more common in ADHD, and vice versa. So, but it's not even that it's like a fight or flight piece, but what will happen is because apneic episodes happen during REM sleep, so it's constantly bringing you in a lighter stage of sleep. So you're not getting the same like percentage of each stage of sleep. So deep sleep is going to restore executive functions more, and REM sleep is you're going to see more benefit on like emotional regulation. So in REM sleep, you don't get that till later in the night. You get much more REM sleep later in the night. So either it's apnea, or if it's like a woman who, for whatever reason, kids waking her up, or physical discomfort, which can happen at any point during, or getting up to pee, right? If that's disrupting your sleep, you might even start by seeing like the emotional regulation struggle, being like the irritability, the overwhelm, like this is just too much and I can't manage it right now. If you're not getting enough REM sleep.
As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself.
So,
Wow, that's so interesting. I have an Oura Ring and I've been really loving tracking it for the last like year. And it was the first thing I noticed. I just didn't know this nuance about sleep. I'd never done any kind of like extra sleep, courses, information, certifications, anything like that. But I did not realize until I was watching it on my own self that, yeah, the deep sleep is coming in the front part of the night. And so if you go to bed too late, you will literally just miss the window to get it. You might get a little bit, but if you go to bed at a normal proper time, you have such a better chance of getting that, hour and a half or whatever it is goal of your deep sleep in the night. And then the REM, yeah, is happening much closer to the morning time. And that's when sometimes people will like, oh, I've just been awake since 3 a.m. And it's like, oh, you didn't get any REM then, or you got very little.
And some people might be like, oh, I can still function, like I restored some of my executive functions essentially, but maybe you're like having more trouble with irritability, or emotional regulation can also look like, anxiety, like, oh my gosh, everything's terrible. Emotional regulation can also look like I'm having a hard time starting a task that I have like a tiny bit of anxiety about, like paying that thing that now has a late fee and I can't even think to pay it because I'm so upset with myself for not before the late fee, like that vicious cycle that happens. So so that sleep, and you can't talk about Yeah, these things in pregnancy and postpartum, without talking about the sleep effect on ADHD and executive functions, for sure. That's a huge part of it.
Okay, awesome. So what about second trimester and third trimester? Are there additional
So
nuances or not really? It's all just.
second trimester kind of gets this like sweet spot, and a lot of people feel that. And again, it depends. But yeah, and then the third trimester, you start to see more sleep disruptions that happens. But the big thing actually that starts happening, and I believe it starts happening in the third trimester, kind of indefinitely, like right after delivery, is which I think is one of the most fascinating, is there's actually like remodeling in the pathways called the mesolimbic pathway, is like your reward, motivation, like what you're focusing on pathway, the whole dopamine. It's remodeled. So cool. And it's so that your brain is like more focused on the infant's needs. Like, this is perfect, right? So that it is literally changing how your brain is wired to be focused on something else. But the thing is, that leaves less executive function, prefrontal cortex bandwidth for self-care, emotional regulation, like your own executive functions. It is all kind of being directed that way, right? So that's a big thing that starts to happen.
Very like animalistic, just keep the baby alive. I mean, it makes sense.
Makes sense that that's how, who survived, right? That we evolved that way. So, but feels like garbage. So, there's that. The other thing that is very big that happens, so, you think like, I think it's like 100 times is it generally the estrogen levels, like 100 times what it would normally be. So at the end of pregnancy, it's incredibly high. And then in about like set within 72 hours drops down to baseline levels. So remembering that estrogen is this like massive player with dopamine, that crash can be huge. Plus, we're going to add in the, oh my gosh, I have a baby now. There's a lot more to think about. My sleep is all over the place sometimes, especially if you've got other kids too. Like all these other factors that are coming in there as well. And then you kind of mentioned this in the beginning, but prolactin starts getting released, and that will inhibit dopamine synthesis. So, because dopamine will inhibit prolactin. So, this sort of like, prolactin, so if you're breastfeeding, or it's naturally going to go high, even if you're not breastfeeding, right? Right after delivery, at least you have a period of time where it is higher. That also inhibits dopamine. So, which means when dopamine's lower or inhibited, ADHD is worse. That's just the take home. So, yeah, and if you're breastfeeding for longer, and prolactin's going to be staying around longer. Not only does that make ADHD more difficult because dopamine's less, but it often changes what you're able to take to support your ADHD too, whether it's medications or even supplements.
Yeah, yes. And I do want to talk about that too. With breastfeeding, that makes I hadn't really put that two and two together, but that's like the medication domperidone for women who are having low milk supply as a dopamine antagonist to keep it low makes sense that it would help with milk supply in those cases if that's the root cause, of the low milk supply, because it's not going to just like make a boost up if there's IGT or something like insufficient glandular tissue. But oh my gosh. Okay. So, and then it's like, yeah, the double hits. If you're a postpartum breastfeeding woman who's awake all night long with a baby and you're not getting your sleep and you have prolactin on, I mean, it just makes, and your estrogen has crashed. So now anything supportive that you had for dopamine is not only gone, but then it's further suppressed. And so this is where we have a struggle. So what can we do? What can women do in these phases to help themselves?
I mean, yeah, it's tricky because, right, as far as if we're talking about like, oh, what medication could I take? What supplement could I take? Like, what are these things that could, like studies aren't done on pregnant women because that would be unethical. So we don't have great data on it. But if you are someone who maybe you have taken ADHD medication, always be talking to your provider. There's a balance there. Like, even like what looks like postpartum depression can be just intense ADHD. And it's important to know that and for providers to be thinking about that, or for you to be suggesting it to a provider, because an SSRI, while great for postpartum depression, if it's not that, if it's an ADHD, if they don't have a dopamine like action. So thinking about those types of things. One.
Meaning it just like for anybody who's like, wait, what? It would just mean it wouldn't work. It wouldn't be the
Exactly.
root cause of what it is that you're trying to get at. So then you would take it and be like, well, nothing happened.
Right. Yeah. I'm still like feeling irritable or overwhelmed or can't seem to do anything or that. And, so important to have someone who you're talking to about it and maybe trial it. But if an SSRI isn't working, to consider like, actually, is this ADHD? And sometimes for that reason, even though like the stimulants aren't always like, we don't love them during breastfeeding. They will go through the breast milk, but methylphenidate like can be used, and it's all a balance. If you're miserable and not able to, support your child in that, like we use the tools we need, and so that can be done or can be done with guidance. So, talk to your provider about that. That can be a more severe situation where you need something like that. Other supports are so. It should already be being checked, but just to kind of like lean into the fact this is also important for ADHD, it's iron. Iron is essential for dopamine synthesis. Really common to be low iron, after pregnancy and postpartum. And right, like I'm sure you've talked about before, but like checking ferritin too. It's not just, are you anemic or not, but that's absolutely essential. B vitamins. So just all those basics of, like making sure you have the foundational pieces in place are going to be helpful. So B vitamins are iron. B vitamins are a big one. Tyrosine, L-tyrosine is an amino acid. It's the precursor to dopamine. Like I'm not saying take it as a supplement because it's also one you have to kind of consider. It doesn't have like great pregnancy data on, but it could be an option. But you can get L-tyrosine from protein. Ensuring you're getting protein, even though you're just like grabbing a snack here and there between something. But looking for those types of things will give you actual dopamine support as well. But the other piece is just like, again, going back to that, understand, keep your expectations realistic. This is a lot. You're not going to be able to perform like you do, when you're not postpartum. So.
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms, too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. Yeah, I think that it's like a little bit of okay, let's make sure that there's nothing that's exacerbating this. Like if you're outright low ferritin or yeah, maybe I mean, although it may not be the exact direct, it's just going to make you feel worse. It's like if your thyroid is not acting properly, like let's do as much as we can, maintain staying on your prenatal supplement, get your good B vitamins and all of your nutritional support that way. Eat well and rest in your postpartum period. Don't go back and like try to bounce back and go doing different things unless you absolutely have to. And then probably, I mean, ideally you'd have a therapist that, or somebody that you can be working with alongside these things. But also one thing for I wanted to mention creatine for sleep deprivation support, helping with that in your postpartum state too. And then Needed has a sleep support or sorry, stress support supplement that I'm obsessed with that you cannot take in pregnancy. But it's basically a bunch of adaptogenic herbs with now also saffron that can help with some of these. It's not necessarily going to be an ADHD thing, but it will be like a stress management thing. When our cortisol patterns are all over the place, which is going to happen because of this disrupted sleep, it doesn't make us feel good. But we can help ourselves blunt that edge with some of these adaptogenic herbs, and that's available to you once the baby is out of your body. So I literally am going to have a bottle of it. Is my most favorite. It's like one of my most favorite supplements. I'm going to have a bottle of it sitting like on my counter or like on my bedside table as soon as this baby's born, because it's really huge. And it's like, okay, we have to kind of be like, sometimes people's brains too, and especially in this population of women who are into the integrative natural medicine stuff, like we want to take optimization to like the ramped up 10 out of 10 level and from all angles. So you'll have to kind of have a little bit of a come to Jesus with yourself to say, this is what I'm going to do. This is my plan. And this is going to be enough. And I'm not going to constantly be trying to figure out and like something else or some other magical thing that's going to change the way that I feel completely. It's like, you know what? Again, the basics, like you said, eating well and resting when you can, expecting your sleep to be disrupted. Okay, we can do a couple of different things for that. We can do some things for the way our adrenal glands are responding. We can make sure that we don't have any deficiencies in iron and different B vitamins, different things like that. Maybe we can have some organizational systems. You know, like I just got a Skylight calendar, which is helping me so much. I don't, have you heard of Skylight
Did
calendars yet?
not,
Yes. Oh my gosh. Huge. Because I cannot hold all these tasks in my brain for my kids, you know, for that's the biggest thing is like, I need you guys for me. That's why I love it. It's not even for me to put on my tasks. I have my own system for my tasks. It's for them so that I don't have to hold it in my brain because I need it somewhere else. Like it cannot be, you know what I mean? So stuff like that. I think, and there are apps. I've never used it, but like,
Some patients that, they've used, well, definitely Skylight is one. They've used the Finch app. Some just really like better, like either Todoist or Trello for kind of organizing their thoughts, ClickUp. Like, there's so many different options. I've not found one like this is an option for ADHD. It's more about what works for you. But yeah, there are a lot of different things out there. And I think, one of the things I always tell my patients over and over with ADHD is I'm like, okay, I want you to think about the things that motivate ADHD brains are, maybe you've heard this too, is right, like a interest. If it's challenging, sometimes a challenge will motivate your brain. If it's new or if it's urgent, kind of on fire. But the newness piece is important to listen to because some people will say, like, oh, I got this app and worked for a while and it stopped working and like apps never work for me. And I don't want you to think about it like that. I want you to think like, oh, no. I just need to kind of rotate through because the newness of something helps me. And so just pick a new one. It's not you failing it, the tool, right? It's just that the newness is part of it. And that's great. Lean into it. It's like the new school supplies effect, I say.
Oh, that's really interesting because this last postpartum for me, my fourth one, I started reading books like fiction books, which I had not read in such a long time. Every time I would read, it was for nonfiction for learning purposes, but I started reading like romanticy. You know, it's like everybody's getting into romanticy. And maybe there was because it's like, you know, you finish a book and then you're on to the next one and it's new. Although the action is the same, it's like I'm reading a book. It's like a totally new storyline, new characters. And it brought me so much joy. I mean, it still does. I've still such, I read for hours every night now. And that was never a part of my life, like ever, ever. And it, when you're struggling postpartum, it's like sometimes you just need, like, I remember feeling always like, I just want there to be ease, like, not everything to feel struggling and hard, but then also the, I could ride, like, if I got a 20 to 40 minute period of time where it was like something that really filled up my cup, going on a walk with my dog or reading a book, like in the middle of the day, just like reading the book, you know, and finding out what happens in the next couple chapters. It's like, man, that had such a huge impact on my overall perception of that time period because I was like really intentionally filling it with joy every day, even if it was small. And I don't remember, I don't know, like, you know, how much it might have affected my focus and my ADHD symptoms, but at least my like mood stuff was better.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a good point. And that's something that I think is so essential, especially for moms, is to even though you're going to feel like I don't have time for this when you're, it's so easy to get in this trap of I shouldn't spend 20 minutes like just to read or do something because there's so many other things that need to be done. And to really have that is something you intentionally like, nope, the next 20 minutes, I'm going to like talk to my partner. Like nobody's going to interrupt me. This is like this very sacred time. Like, is 20 minutes doable for that? And that it's only something that brings you joy. And a lot of times, the women I talk to, they're like, I don't even know what that is anymore. It's like, okay, well, and it's sad, and it's the truth of our society, and especially women and moms today. But start by making a list of like things you think you might like to do, and then, go from there. But that does restore your battery in a way that just like scrolling on your phone, even though that gives you a little bit of dopamine, it doesn't restore you in the same way as like a joyful event does.
Yeah, I literally have a note in my notes app that says things that bring me joy. Like it, that's literally, and it, some of it's random. It's like, birds, like starling birds when they're in murmuration, like when they're doing that, like I love that. I love that so much. I don't know why. I just think it's so beautiful, so fun. But then other things, it'll be like taking a really hot bath, like things I can actually physically do. But seriously, I started building it when after my second was born because I was like, I was nervous that I was going to go down the rabbit hole that I did with my first. So I was like trying to support myself in all the ways possible, being like, okay, Morgan, don't lose yourself. Like, there are things that make you happy. You just have to maybe start writing them down because you will forget, or you will feel so unmotivated to even think about them if things are getting really bad in that state of your mental health, So, I mean, it's yeah, it seems like a little task, but it is a big deal, I think. Okay, I wanted to ask some of these questions that the readers or the listener followers, whatever they're called, have asked. And so this one is a repeated one in different flavors, but so how do I tell if it's ADHD or if I'm just being pulled in a thousand different directions and have a lot of responsibilities? There's a question like this in a couple of different ways where they're just trying to figure out like, is it, how do I know if I'm just a busy mom who's like maybe working and juggling sports schedules and whatever, and I have these little kids, or do I actually have ADHD too?
And I mean, I think this is where like you really can't diagnose yourself. You really can't. You can suspect it too, but you really to go to a provider to see, someone who does this. So if you were to ask the question, like, how do I know something like that? Once you actually like get into questionnaires and screening for ADHD, I could have someone who they're just really struggling with maybe overwhelm and forgetting things, but those are really just the two things. I can sort of put them in only two categories versus something that shows me that there's kind of a predominant, like a pervasive, there are a certain number of areas that I see a struggle in that's more of a pattern versus like, I'm just stressed out, or even like I'm just sleep deprived, or this is anxiety, which looks a lot like ADHD sometimes. It, impacts executive functions. So, kind of being able to tell how those different presentations are. And one of the biggest things is ADHD doesn't just show up later in life. And there is a lot of talk of like, oh, if you school is easy, you won't see it, but we always can see it when we talk about something earlier in life. And there'll have been a sign there. It's not like I was perfectly fine, like no issues with this. This was never an issue until I had kids. And then it's like, yeah, you've just hit your threshold. But the problem is with ADHD, the threshold is really low for the executive function piece before they feel really hard. Or they take a ton of your energy. So whereas, you may just your demands are just really, really high. So the short answer is it's hard. Talk to a professional.
Yeah, go get an actual diagnosis or an assessment to see, because then it will help you decide what to do.
Definitely. And even if you're like, oh, I'm sure I have ADHD, people always say it, whatever. There's still a difference when you fully get the diagnosis. I've absolutely seen it with my patients. They're like, I just want to officially get the diagnosis. I know I have it. Kids have it, whatever. And then once they do, they're like, I feel like everything shifted, just like having that validation and understanding. So I recommend it.
Yeah, and just being able to not be so hard on yourself, I think too. That was one thing that shifted for me, is I was just like, oh, okay. There
Yeah,
you go. All
that's
right.
theme around these struggles, right?
Okay, there's a lot of other questions that are about how to manage it without meds, and then what about with meds? Like, so some are not going to be safe in pregnancy and breastfeeding, some will, or they'll be kind of like borderline. But as you said, you have to do what you have to do and have some balance. And I'm such a proponent of that because it's like, Obviously, if I could choose, I would say everybody would be able to find their coping techniques that is like through diet and lifestyle. Cool. But that's just not how it goes sometimes. And sometimes the dysfunction is so bad, it's like you need to maybe be on these temporarily for a little while, and maybe it'll be longer. I don't know. But, and yeah, they do have risk too, but there's also risks to being in a really poor mental state, not being able to live your life. Like, you just got to do it. And this conversation we bring up a lot when it comes to sleep training. It's like, I do believe infants belong sleeping next to their parents in bed for as long as possible and nurse throughout the night and stuff like that. I mean, yes, that would be ideal. And at the same time, I get it when parents are getting so little sleep, whatever's happening, the demands are so high, they can't, like, it's not happening that they need to sleep train and that they need to do it earlier than would be ideal. And even cry it out, although I'm not saying cry it out is okay. I do understand why people would choose it if it's like we're talking about having a parent that's alive versus not a parent that's
Right.
alive. Like, sleep train the baby then because it's gonna be okay, you know? Like,
Right.
there's extremes too where we need to make these choices. So, anyways, what, like, is there, I don't know, I've heard there's like some peptides that can help with ADHD symptoms. I know you kind of talked about tyrosine and making sure we're not ferritin low, but is there any other kind of like other main categories of supplements or things, diet, lifestyle things that you recommend that are like maybe helpful for bridging some of these gaps in these time periods? Or is it really just so individual?
I mean, it was pretty individual. I would say that the biggest areas I see benefit and boost is, and this is again, if I'm talking about not breastfeeding in general, you know, that these things that are talking about, they all have their caveats. But L-tyrosine is probably hands down the one I see work the best, in more therapeutic doses, not just like, you know, it's like you actually have a targeted dose. The thing is, L-tyrosine does still, you know, it can be stimulating. So there's some people like it can have effects on like increasing heart rate and those types of things. So you got to watch it. But L-tyrosine is one of my favorites as far as being sort of similar to a stimulant, and improving like focus and motivation. If somebody is like really struggling more with the overwhelm and emotional regulation, like I'm snapping at my kids, it's just like too much, I like can't process it, that type of thing, I love pharmaGABA for that. And that's different than GABA. I love pharmaGABA for that. I have seen that to be hands down the most beneficial, like just anecdotally. The way that it's thought to work is that it's actually like increasing your alpha brain waves, which are the ones we have more of when we're meditating and more early stages of sleep. So I find that that really helps to make the nervous system just less reactive, or if there's anxiety there too, you know, as well, which a lot of times it's pretty similar, or like a sensory overwhelm. I love it for that. Others that I've seen, more case by case, like some people are more responsive to it than others, is L-theanine can be helpful. I think pharmaGABA works a little better. You can use both, generally, like they're not contraindicated. But saffron, not bad. Sometimes some of the lion's mane mushrooms, but my go-tos as far as supplements and like just addressing deficiencies, you know, so the iron, B vitamins, vitamin D, that type of thing, is the L-tyrosine, and then, or, you know, more kind of calming the nervous system, you know, pharmaGABA-theanine type of thing. Haven't done a ton with peptides. And I would also say a lot of the products were like, oh, dopamine, like boosting products, and it's like a lot of different things. I just haven't seen those work as well as the individuals. And then there's also like if it's more of a burnout picture, you talk about like adaptogens, and that can really be helpful too. Or even,
What about? Oh, go ahead.
was gonna say, or even like hormone supports too, particularly if we're talking about like perimenopause, those types of things. Actually, supplementing hormones can be one of the most effective ADHD supports. So.
I just had a friend who that's exactly what was her hormones were completely tanked out. She knew she had ADHD. But she has three little kids, and it's like it just was getting worse and worse. She was having all these other symptoms that were going alongside of it too, and just feeling like she was going crazy, really, really miserable. And come to find out, she has like no hormones. So she got into a large plan with her doctor. I don't know exactly all the details, but one of them is a lot of bioidenticals. And she's like, she said that within 2 weeks, she literally, it, her entire life completely changed. She's like, I cannot believe that I have been living like this. And it's like, yeah, we as naturopathic doctors, we want to think like, well, let's, okay, there's a reason why your hormones are off. Like, can we do things to get them back online with your own body and stuff? And sometimes you can. And then also sometimes the person is, again, like in this situation, like, or as we had been talking about, maybe it's so far gone at this point that we just have to supplement and get them back to like a good baseline. And we can work on all the supportive things
Exactly.
in time and as it's going along. But like, we need them to be functioning and enjoying their life on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, bioidentical hormones are not the devil. Like, there's a lot of people who are so dogmatically anti just anything. You know, they'll pick anything and then they'll be dogmatically anti it. And it's like, I don't know. I think maybe just like as more years of experience and stuff goes by, you see that there is nuance and there is benefit in these different cases because her entire life has changed. She's like, I cannot believe how happy I am and how I feel calm and I'm like present with my kids and I'm not irritated at them all day long. Like,
Yeah,
you know?
100%. Yeah. And medication's that way too. And sometimes it's like, oh, you know, medication, ADHD medication or otherwise allowed me to like get systems in place more easily. And then I didn't need the medication as much or, you know, like, but yeah, help it get the systems in place. So,
Yeah, so that you can do things.
exactly.
Okay, somebody asked, does this cause irritability? I mean, yes, it can cause irritability.
Definitely can, yeah. And then plus, you know, it causes struggle with emotional regulation, so overwhelm type of thing, yeah. And so it could be there's it 30% of people with ADHD also have anxiety. Also, I didn't mention this before, but it like PMDD, it's something like 50 to 70% of women with ADHD can have PMDD, and it's like 5% of neurotypical. Like the range is staggering. Like the increased rate of PMDD. So it, I mean, don't quote me on the statistics.
Yeah, but that just lends itself to this idea too that like as hormones are dropping quickly, the brain is going like, bah, I can't handle this.
Exactly. So, but yeah, to that point, there's other things, you know, that are just more common in ADHD. It might not be necessarily, oh, this is ADHD making you irritable, but it's more, you know, exacerbating it, or it's more common. So.
Okay, and then I mean, this is kind of leading into perimenopause in a way, but there's a question like, you know, well, what does it look like in a 40-year-old woman?
Yeah, I mean, and it totally depends, of course.
Yes,
But
right.
yeah, and whether perimenopause, but you know, often like hormones are already starting to almost always starting to drop at age 40. So yeah, that it just looks like ADHD getting worse almost always.
Great.
Like
Can't wait to enter that.
I have a decent number of patients too who, you know, they're like, I've finally sought out like getting evaluation during perimenopause. Like they kind of like white knuckled through it until that point. And then they're just like, yeah, this is rough.
Yeah, and then just like also I want to mention because there is so many things. This is something I'd worked with my therapist a couple of years ago with was like, yeah, creating those systems like you mentioned. Because yes, we can take supplements and things, but really it's enacting a change in your daily life of what is your biggest struggle? Like for me, like I was talking about with list making or how the Skylight calendar has really helped me take the mental load of all the different things and tasks that I need each kid to do because it's different. Like getting them to do those things and be compliant without me having to hold it all. It's there, they can see it, they can read it. Or like if they're long, young and they can't read it, there's emojis that can help prompt them to remember what the task was. And it's like, you know, you can set it so it's every day or it's every Monday. Like my son will do his typing class and his foreign language class, but like he doesn't have to do those every day. So, you know, I love those kinds of things. Or I just know a lot of it has just been kind of evolved over the years, but then I've made even more systems for myself. Like right now, one of the things I'm working on with my therapist too is just like scaling, like noticing my emotional dysregulation like starting to go up and taking a moment to just be like, okay, before I get, you know, like whatever's happening with the with things, or like simple stuff like blood sugar regulation. You know, left to my own devices, I'm not really like an eater. If somebody's making me food or I'm at a restaurant, I will hog down anything, you know, but I can kind of get just distracted in my day and I'm like doing things and I'm like, I don't want to stop because I'm doing well. I'm focusing. I don't want to say it's lunchtime, like whatever. But that's not going to play well for anybody. I mean, you can't do that when you're pregnant and breastfeeding very easily anyways, but it's just some of those types of things are what we have to wrap our minds around as our like coping mechanisms. There's a lot of questions about like, well, what can I do about it? How can I help? Like, da da da. It's a lot of that. I mean, yes, you can take some supplements too, but you have to figure out a way to make your particular individual symptoms work with your life a little bit better too.
And you can get like there's ADHD coaches who are really targeted on like helping you see what systems would make sense for you and give you ideas for those types of things. Those can be huge. So you can always look into those because it is a very individual. I mean, I could go on. There's a list of so many tools. There's some great books out there too. I see like, listen to some books, see what kind of sticks, be like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. I'm gonna try it out. You'll find the tools, they're out there, but you just have to find them.
Okay, and then the last two questions are about caffeine and then screen time and how you see those interplay with ADHD.
I mean, caffeine is definitely most people, I should say definitely. Caffeine, many times people will use it to help with their focus. I mean, very similar to stimulants in a sense. And the thing I don't like about caffeine is as a primary strategy for ADHD is just if it's getting too high of levels. I am, so naturopaths are all over the place, right? I am very much a like, hey, like it's paid for it, but like if you need to eat Lucky Charms in the morning, like great, but like with everything in moderation, like we're gonna figure it out. So I'm not anti-caffeine at all. I find a lot of people are like, I some and I'll even suggest like have some coffee, or if you don't respond well to coffee, have some matcha in the afternoon. If that actually helps you and doesn't interfere with your sleep and you aren't seeing negatives, then great. Like that might be what you need to be helpful. I don't love like, oh, I'm primarily using this and I'll have people who are drinking like 8 cups of coffee a day. I'm like, oh, we're probably overdoing it a little bit. Let's find some Nimitz. So, and I don't love caffeine for kids, but talking
No.
about women, then yeah, sometimes, just listen to your body. But it will probably be helpful. And so it's just weighing whether that has negative effects or not for you.
Okay, thank you. And what about screens and, do we think it's making things worse? Do we, da da da.
Yeah, I mean, there is like if you ever read anything with Dr. Russell Barkley, he's done a lot of like the more science-based ADHD stuff. He talks about like something called VAST syndrome, where essentially like these things that give us quick dopamine all the time, it's like creating an ADHD-like state, where our bodies are just like used to be able to get dopamine like this. And so when something does not give us dopamine quick, it's so much more difficult. So there is an aspect to that that yes, it seems like we're probably worsening things. I think screens in moderation is fine, but what you should think of screens as, in fact, if you ever explore something called dopamine menus, they talk about this. It's like the junk food of dopamine. So you can do it. Sometimes you're just like, I just need a moment to like chill out and like not think about anything and just get some dopamine. It can be useful in those, but set a timer because it's also really easy to get stuck in a loop where you're in it too long and it's actually not restorative to you.
What is it? Like videos or?
Like if we're just talking about like videos, but I mean it could be binging shows, it could be anything
Oh.
like that where like it's not a restorative activity in the sense of like I went on a walk and I like felt better as a whole afterwards, even though it might have taken energy to go on the walk and do these things. Screens are easy because they don't take energy to start. They also aren't as restorative. So just think of them as that way. Like, yeah, they give you something, but it's not great. So everything in moderation. And then people with ADHD are going to have a harder time stopping screens just because it is a place where your brain is getting dopamine now. And your brain struggles to get dopamine in a lot of places. So it's hard to turn away from something like that.
Yeah, so you might have to have some system again, like back to systems.
Yeah.
Maybe you get like that brick thing or
Yeah,
your
exactly.
timer apps or whatever to make yourself stop.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And even just like having awareness too. Like I've started to help my son realize his like cheeks get really red, his ears get really red if he's playing a video game. He's very into it, you know, whatever. And it sometimes doesn't make him feel very good. And so I've just started to kind of like bring some awareness to him about how that is work playing out, because I'll feel the same thing. Like there's a difference between when I'm like having a funny good time scrolling reels and I'm like laughing and or I feel like I can't stop and I'm like watching myself and there's a strange difference and I'm like, okay, no, I'm gonna stop. And I'm like, oh wait, and I'll be very metacognitive about it. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm kind of doing that thing again where I know that I want to stop, I know I should stop, and I'm just choosing to keep going. I'll be like, okay, three more, and then I'll see that third one, and then I'm like, okay, well, what's the next one, or whatever. But it makes your whole body, like, if you're starting to feel and have a bit more awareness, layers, little layer by little layer, you will really realize, like, this is not good. This
Right.
does not feel good. It's like you just have to throw it across the room and go outside and touch grass. Be like, okay, I'm breaking this spell that this thing has had on me, and it's wild. But I mean, there's so many more people that are experiencing that than I think people even realize. And so that's why I'm bringing it up. I'm so happy to have had you on the podcast today. Thank you so much, Carrie, for
No problem.
all of your expertise, your advice, your understanding about all of this, and your passion also for working with people in this domain, because it's a specific thing and a specific struggle when there's kids coming into the world and your hormones and your body is changing and shifting so much. I mean, I think it's hard for the non-ADHD woman, right, to experience all these ups and downs. And then just validating, I think, is the number one takeaway from this for those who do that, like, this isn't you being a bad mom, this isn't you not being cut out for motherhood or like whatever weird stories you're telling yourself. This is
Right.
just your brain.
Right. Yeah.
And it's having a hard time because these hormones are shifting so quickly and they have such a big impact.
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't have to look a certain way. It doesn't have to be perfect. Like, it won't be, but that's okay.
And that, exactly. So thank you so much for coming on and being here. I appreciate
Perfect.
it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.